Good evening. Here is the 7 p.m. news presented by Elizabeth Mbombone Agbo. In our headlines, the Emissary of Pope Francis, Monsignor Paul Richard Gallagher, has praised the leadership skills of President Paul Biya and the excellent bilateral relations between Cameroon and the Holy See. Ghost civil servants begin gnashing their teeth as the government cleans the payroll, suspending over 1,000. In the meantime, the head coaches of the Indomitable Lions and the Warriors have promised to grab the last 3 points in Pool J at the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium tomorrow at 2 p.m. Those were our lead stories, and now a full development. A senior official from the Vatican has described President Paul Biya as a leader with a clear vision for Cameroon and concern about the welfare of his compatriots. Monsignor Paul Richard Gallagher, secretary in charge of relations with other states and international organizations, was speaking today at the Unity Palace after a summit encounter with the President of the Republic, Paul Biya. The emissary of Pope Francis also praised the excellent bilateral relations existing between Cameroon and the Holy See. Unity Palace correspondent Amin King Edwards completes that story.
All protocol and security duties were already in place when the highly esteemed guest, Special Envoy of Pope Francis, arrived at Unity Palace this Monday morning, November 18, for a summit encounter with the President of the Republic, Paul Biya. His name is Monsignor Paul Richard Gallagher, secretary in charge of relations with other states and international organizations dispatched from the Vatican for a working visit in Cameroon. On his arrival at the Unity Palace, the Pope's emissary was jointly welcomed by the Chief of State Protocol Simon Pierre Bikele and by the Minister, Director of the Civil Cabinet at the Presidency of the Republic, Samuel Mvondo Ayolo, with whom he shared protocol civilities before the high-profile tete-a-tete with President Paul Biya. A one-on-one that lasted exactly 1 hour, with a constructive and fruitful conversation covering principally two areas of national and international interest: bilateral relations between Cameroon and the Holy See, and the war-infested areas around the globe. Here is the special envoy.
We were talking about relations between the Holy See and Cameroon. President was remembering his visits to the Vatican. He's probably the head of state that may have visited the Vatican more than anybody else. And also the visits of two popes here, John Paul II and Benedict XVI. We did a real sort of tour de table of international situation. Obviously, the president was showing his concern for the wars in Ukraine and Russia, and then in the Middle East. Also, we talked a little bit about general situation of Africa and the prospects for the new American president next year.
The very eminent personality from the Holy See was very generous with his description of President Paul Biya as a leader with a clear vision for his country and very preoccupied about the welfare of his compatriot, adding that relations between Cameroon and the Vatican are just but pretty much excellent.
The relations excellent. They're certainly very normal in the sense we have a free exchange of information, of news through the Apostolic Nuncio here in Yaoundé and the ambassador to the Holy See. Also, I must say that we have an excellent relationship with the Catholic Bishop of Cameroon. They were very active in the recent Synod of Bishops, and I see in here a Catholic community which is very, very active and determined to be of service to the population, and in that the Holy See will be very supportive.
The special envoy of Pope Francis left the Unity Palace wearing a broad smile and carrying along with him a depth of gratitude that speaks to the intimacy and trustworthiness that he saw in President Paul Biya, with whom he exchanged souvenir gifts as a sign of brighter days ahead for Cameroon-Vatican relations.
The Cameroonian community of Guangzhou, China, has expressed gratitude to the President of the Republic, Paul Biya, for signing a decree to open a consulate general in Guangzhou, stating that they are ready to help the government speed up its implementation. Amos Enonyake, our special envoy to Guangzhou, has the details.
The presidential decree opening a consulate general in Guangzhou, the main economic hub in China with about 2,000 Cameroonians in the Guangdong province working and running several business ventures, has been saluted by the community of Cameroonians in Guangzhou, praising the presidential action. Dr. Kwate Heve is the president of the Cameroonian community of Guangdong, China.
We waited for this. More Cameroonians reside here in Guangzhou. Traveling to Beijing for any document was very expensive, time-consuming, and risky.
The Cameroonian entrepreneurs in Guangzhou say they are ready to assist the government put in place the consulate general in Guangzhou.
Kingsley Azeche, Honorable President of the Cameroonian Community here in Guangdong, China. Guangdong is a province that has the highest GDP in China for over 30 years. Everybody in Guangdong is very happy with the decision of the head of state.
The Consulate General will go a long way to improve on the well-being of Cameroonians in the Guangdong and other three provinces. Imus Enonyaket Agbo on special assignment in Guangzhou, China. CLTV News.
In the meantime, the bill to authorize the President of the Republic to ratify the agreement on criminal police cooperation between Central and East African states has been scrutinized by members of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the National Assembly. The draft law, which aims to identify avenues for police cooperation between the two sub-regions and to enable a common approach to combating international organized crime, terrorism, and violent extremism, has been defended by the Minister of Territorial Administration, Paul Atanganji. He was assisted by the Minister Delegate to the Minister of External Relations in charge of relations with the Commonwealth, Felix Mbayu. After the in-camera deliberations, Parliamentary Affairs Correspondent Doris Bate Tatoekwe asked Minister Paul Atanganji how important the draft legal instrument is. This is what he has to say.
This is a legal instrument which is very interesting because the police services in Central and East Africa will as from now work under one global framework and their scope of intervention will be larger. They are putting in place mechanisms to track down criminals, to provide legal documents and to put in place training centers where they can come out with one common objective and a roadmap how to fight organized crime. So I think if the government has tabled this bill in front of Parliament is to send a powerful message to criminals, to terrorists, that there can be no hiding place for them. As you are moving from one country to the other, you should know that the police is behind you.
As you heard in one of our lead stories, some 1,172 absentee civil servants have been dismissed from Cameroon's public service. This information is contained in a communique rendered public today by the Minister of Public Service and Administrative Reform, Joseph Lee. Senior reporter Teke Julius now looks at the importance of this latest move by the government.
The dismissal of 1,172 absentee civil servants and state agents made public this Monday by the Minister of Public Service and Administrative Reform, Joseph Le, was highly expected following the directive that was made by the Prime Minister, Head of Government, Joseph John Gute, after the Cabinet meeting of the 23rd of July 2024, in which he underscored the urgency of addressing chronic absenteeism in Cameroon's public service, a phenomenon which has continued to have a serious impact on public service delivery, manifested in delays in administrative processes and a general decline in the performance and efficiency of Cameroon's public service. The dismissals come to add to 1,981 others earlier dismissed from the public service between 2022 and 2024. According to Minister Joseph Le, a total of 8,766 absentee civil servants were summoned since the beginning of 2024 to clarify their situation to establish whether they were effectively present at work or not, but just 601 bothered to appear before the disciplinary committee put in place by the ministry to ensure that no one was unduly punished. This latest move comes to add to many actions undertaken by the government on the high instructions of the head of state to render the management of Cameroon's payroll more efficient and credible. The results have been palpable, with over 30 billion CFA francs saved in 2021 alone, following the identification and suspension of the salaries of 10,000 fictitious public service workers. Observers, however, say issues of wages and poor working conditions have to be addressed to prevent all of Cameroon's civil servants from looking elsewhere for greener pastures.
The move to clean up the public service by dismissing perpetual absentees is in line with the operation to physically count the state personnel. Those found guilty had been put out of the payroll since 2018, and the Minister of Public Service and Administrative Reforms, Joseph Lee, says absenteeism and indiscipline would not be tolerated. He spoke to news editor Florence Mekeh.
We are implementing the instructions of the head of state, the text guiding the functioning of our administration. Since 2018 and 2019, we have been working on the operation called COPE. And you have noticed that more than 8,766 personnel were absent. We have called on them. We even sent notes of inquiries why they are absent. But only 601 personnel responded to our questions, which means that more than 8,000, we don't know where they are. And now this is the time to sanction all of them. That's why more than 3,577 civil servants have been sacked from the public service, and the process is going on, and we would like to end this by December 31st. It's a very important operation because our state loses a lot of money by paying those who do not work.
In more news, the Minister of Public Health has hailed the outgoing country representative of the World Health Organization, Dr. Fanuel Habimana, for the excellent collaboration between his organization and the state of Cameroon, which enabled the country to address major health challenges. Dr. Manaoda Malashi was speaking in Yaoundé today during a farewell ceremony organized to honor the outgoing WHO representative, attended amongst others by the Minister of Housing and Urban Development, Celestine Kecha Cortez. George Mwam reports.
For his over 6 years as the WHO representative in Cameroon, Dr. Fanuel Habimana worked tirelessly to reinforce the public health system and is leaving behind significant achievements. During his mandate, Cameroon successfully launched the Universal Health Coverage Scheme, was declared free of wild polio in 2020, overcame the COVID-19 pandemic, and multiplied efforts to increase the rate of vaccination across the country. Efforts which didn't go unnoticed, attested by the cross of the Sovereign Order of Malta, conferred on him today, for which he remains grateful.
I'm really a fulfilled officer, and I'm very pleased to have served Cameroon all these years and have made positive partnership within government. And also, I want to mention that the Ordre de Malte felt that because of the contribution of WHO in their health works, this medal is given to me.
As he goes, the wish of Dr. Fanuel Habimana is that Cameroon should not relent in its drive towards complete universal health coverage by 2030.
Cameroonians are good people, and we just make prayers that the path of development that the country is on continue so that prosperity comes in, better health comes in, better social services come in.
Affectionately described as his technical advisor number zero by the Minister of Public Health, Dr. Manoda Malachi, the outgoing WHO representative expressed gratitude to the government of Cameroon for their excellent collaboration, which contributed to the success of his mandate.
George Mwam reporting. The Minister of Livestock, Fisheries and Animal Industry, Dr. Tiger, has urged stakeholders involved in the fight against antimicrobial resistance to collaborate and share expertise. He was speaking during the official launch of the city edition of the World Antimicrobial Resistance Awareness Week in Yaoundé. Details with FOC Babatunde.
Studies from the World Health Organization forecast that by 2050, microorganisms will be resistant to antimicrobial drugs, causing almost 10 million deaths annually across the globe. According to the African Union Bureau representative for animal resources, Dr. Huram Salih, a continental week-long activity is organized on this backdrop annually to renew measures to address the dangers of microbials.
We need to communicate about the overuse and the misuse of antimicrobials in the animal health, in the farms, the animal production. We still use antimicrobials as growth promoters, and we need to educate farmers and professionals in the field about the danger of these practices.
The World Health Organization is regulating environmental waste management to help manage the situation.
The efforts include joint trainings for stakeholders both within the Ministry of Health and that of Agriculture to enhance One Health collaboration and to encourage joint action towards the containment of antimicrobial resistance.
More work is yet to be done. The representative of the World Health Organization for Animal Health, Dr. Jane Weyero, explains.
The work done includes development of standards that guide countries and member states to be able to implement and to strengthen the veterinary services at the country level to be able to contribute and do their part.
The one-week sensitization against antimicrobial resistance aims to sensitize all actors in the proper use of antibiotics.
The Minister of Social Affairs, Mrs. Pauline Irengene, will preside over the activities marking the celebration of the 35th edition of the World Children's Day on Wednesday, November 20, 2024, as from 10 a.m. at SOS Children's Village, Cameroon, in Balmayo, under the theme, Listen to the Future, Defend the Rights of the Child. The main objective of this year's event is to raise national and international awareness on the urgent need to build a world in which children's rights are respected. The focus this year will be on the need to allow children to express their views as enshrined in the International Convention on the Rights of the Child. Our in-depth segment of the news delves on the World Children's Day. The day highlights the need to protect and promote children's rights, including access to education, safety and dignity, as outlined in international agreements. Experts point out that deeply rooted cultural practices such as early marriages, child labor and corporal punishment frequently undermine efforts to uphold children's rights, leaving many vulnerable. Leslie Mangi spoke with parents, educators, the child's advocates to explore these issues.
The challenges of upholding children's rights in Cameroon remain significant despite international commitments. In rural areas, poverty and cultural traditions often dictate decisions that compromise a child's well-being. As a parent, Nikes Mangi puts it, early marriages and child labor are still prevalent. She adds that children should be given their rights.
I believe that the children have the right to shelter, feeding, health, that at least if your child is sick, you should be able to acquire or to give the minimum health care and most especially education.
On the international front, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees stresses the need for collective action. Batinga Gambet, a UNHCR official, explains that children's rights cannot be optional.
The responsibility of refugees is the state's responsibility. It's not UNHCR. UNHCR is here, and UNHCR is supporting states for the respect of refugee rights. Refugees have the rights to education, of course, but they also have the rights to health, the right to participate in life.
As the country joins the World Children's Day on Wednesday, the voices of parents and advocates alike call for urgent measures to ensure that every child, regardless of their background, has the opportunity to thrive.
Many children in Ebolova in the South region spend their days selling goods on the streets to generate income for the family. Despite government's ban on child labor and exposure of minors to dangers, the phenomenon is still very common. Silas Gwine tells us more.
I sell every day to have money to go to school. 12-year-old student Yan Joel Bobda moves from one area of the Bolova main market to the other, carrying a bucket full of yogurt as he avoids being knocked down by passers-by. I can earn up to 3,000 a day. It depends. Mindful of the time frame he has to sell before heading to school at 12, he reluctantly grants us an interview. Yan Joel is one of the hundreds of children in Ebolova who have turned to vending on the streets. And as David Vondon Timba, member of the civil society, explains, it is unacceptable.
It's a disgrace for parents to let their children go out to sell. The phenomenon is growing.
Children need to be protected.
The painful reality is that some families depend on these children financially.
There are times that maybe they sell for themselves to eat. At times, there's no food for them to eat. But normally, it's not fair for children to sell. Like all that time,
these young hawkers are exposed to any type of danger.
They are not safe, especially girls, children.
Lately, there has been a sharp increase in the number of child vendors across the town. Residents are unanimous that it is an abuse of children's human rights. Silas Nkwine, CRTV News.
In the center region, many children in the capital city, Yaoundé, are seen hawking, some advancing survival as the main reason for the activity. Karin Tosam reports.
On the bustling streets and markets in Yaoundé, they're spotted with varied articles for sale. Most of the teenagers have mastered the art of convincing passers-by to buy from them as they swiftly move from one part of the street to the other. Some in Yaoundé believe children who start hawking at tender ages stand better chances of successfully running businesses in the future.
I can tell that most of the children that grew up helping their parents in one way or the other can be better managers because they've had challenges and their parents have given them advice.
Others, however, insist that parents must assume their full responsibilities and stop child labor while providing basic needs for their offspring without sending them to the streets.
Children are entitled to go to school. You see them doing roadside selling. It's an abuse because parents are supposed to take care of their children until they reach a certain age.
Many, particularly parents, lament that the economic hardship marked by rising cost of basic commodities has pushed them to involve their children in hawking at early ages as they seek to meet up with the family's financial demands. Karin Tosam, CRTV News, Center.
Many African societies struggle to balance the rights of a child and cultural tradition. Practices like early marriage and corporal punishment often clash with a child's right to education, protection, and dignity. Senior reporter Rita Yosembong, in the following write-up, looks at how African cultural traditions and children's rights can coexist.
When we talk about the rights of a child, most people envision education, healthcare, and the protection from harm. These rights are enshrined in international agreements like the United Nations Convention on the Right of the Child and even in the constitutions of many African nations. But how do these rights align or clash with African culture? Let's begin with an example. In some African communities, a child is considered the property of their parents or extended family. This belief often justifies practices like child marriage, child labor, or even withholding education from girls in favor of boys. Take the case of a 14-year-old girl from the far north region of Cameroon. Instead of going to school, she is married off to settle a family debt, and while her peers learn, she is burdened with responsibilities she isn't emotionally or physically ready for. And here lies the tension. Her family even argues that this is part of their culture. Also consider the phenomenon of corporal punishment in African homes and schools. Many African parents defend the use of physical discipline as necessary for raising respectful children. Yet modern child rights advocates argue that such practices harm children's psychological well-being. But now, where do we draw the line? Is it possible to respect African culture while fully upholding the rights of a child? I believe the answer lies in redefined traditions, focusing on their core values rather than their updated practices. I think this is a conversation every African society must have. The rights of a child are not negotiable. They are a promise of a better future. And a future without children empowered to thrive is no future at all.
In many parts of the country, children's city rights being denied and even attacked, especially in the conflict-ridden areas. Apart from the troubled parts where children's rights are being trampled upon, there is the phenomenon of climate change making life unbearable for young people. The guest on the 7 p.m. is a teacher and psychologist, Full Lovett Siri. She discusses the issue in this phone conversation with Winston Lepka.
Full Lovett Siri, what is your opinion on the respect of the rights of the child in Cameroon today?
Children's rights have been tampered with, especially in areas of conflict, because every now and then, classes are being disrupted. The children live in fear of the unknown, considering the fact that they don't know what the next minute holds for them. Secondly, the fact that children no longer put on uniforms to go to school in some areas don't make the learning environment enabling. Also, some parents, because of poverty, are unable to sponsor their children through school. And I must state here that it is not a child's fault that the parents are poor. In other words, it is the duty of a parent to send the child to school. But those parents who cannot send their children to school because they are poor end up depriving the children of their right to education. Sad enough, some children are used by their family members as a source of income. This is in a case where children are sent to the street as hawkers. Some are seen carrying trays and selling while their mates are in the classroom studying.
Seemingly, today more than ever before, children's rights are trampled upon in the country, especially in conflict areas. They are practically denied the right to education. They are forced to frequently be on the move, fleeing the hot areas of the conflict zone, and are abducted and tortured. Is it a hopeless situation?
It is not a hopeless situation, because we are all praying and hoping for the return of peace so children can get to go back to school normally. Secondly, some of the children who have family members in areas that are not experiencing crisis can carefully move to those areas and continue with their studies.
It appears even nature is denying the children their rights. Take the climate change phenomenon with its associated disasters, for example, that destroy school buildings, houses, obliging some children to be separated from their families, fraying ties to their communities and all whatnot. How can the children be protected?
Parents should follow the government's sensitizations against constructing or settling in dangerous areas that can be affected by landslides and floods. And to combat difficulties that may stem from climate change, we should encourage afforestation, that is, the planting of trees.
Full Lovett Siri, you are a certified marriage counselor, a relationship coach, a psychologist, a teacher. Thank you very much for your time, ma'am.
On to sports, the coaches of Cameroon and Zimbabwe have expressed unwavering confidence in their squad's ability to secure victories this Tuesday when both sides meet in a D6 2025 Africa Cup of Nations qualifier at the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium. Coach Mark Breeze and Coach Michael Nees were speaking this afternoon at the press hall of the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium during separate pre-match press conferences. And on to this press release, the Minister of Finance, considering the significant interest observed in recent days regarding the filing of tax returns, hereby informs non-professional taxpayers subject to the annual personal income tax declaration that the deadline for submission has been extended to December 1, 2024. Additionally, the Minister of Finance commends the numerous taxpayers who have already voluntarily fulfilled this tax obligation. The Minister of Finance further emphasizes that non-compliance with this filing obligation will result in the enforcement of penalties as stipulated in the Manual of Tax Procedures to further assist the concerned taxpayers in meeting their filing requirements. Dedicated support teams have been deployed at their respective tax offices and within the Directorate General of Taxation, along with an online assistance mechanism, including a toll-free call center 8200, an electronic assistance platform, help desk, accessible via the homepage of the Directorate General of Taxation's website, www.support.harmony2.cm, a messaging service, +237 691 881 881, specifically for taxpayers residing abroad. The Minister of Finance counts on the compliance of all. And that's the 7 p.m. news presented by Elizabeth Mbombone Agbor.